Welcome to Microverse. This is a song by the band called Bikini Trill. Enjoy.
As researchers confirm through countless studies what people have been experiencing for millennia, that plant medicines can have a profound and measurable therapeutic impact on those seeking healing and evolution through intentional use. As stigma continues to dissolve and cities across the U.S. move to decriminalize psychedelics, use of these incredibly effective tools is becoming more widespread. I'm here to bring knowledge, guidance, and support for your journey towards expansion to help maximize both safety and depth of healing.
That was Jen Price reading her words that greet you on our website, entheogen.com. I hope everybody is doing at least okay, if not great. And if not, then we'll work with that because this is life and it's a roller coaster and it goes up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down. Love you guys. If you want to link in and keep up with us, this podcast, and our community of fungi lovers, musicians, and artists, then go to Instagram, because that's where it's at right now. You can search Microverse the Mushroom Podcast. You can search Entheogen, which is spelled E-N-T-H-E-O-J-E-N. And yeah, let's see what's happening there. Before we begin, I'm going to read a poem for you. With a cold moon in the sky, I feel each passing by. A night howler among us has gone to the depth of this life. I imagine a place in jeopardy, sent spiraling down a path, led by sad, withering darkness, lost and alone. Together, we have stood and put faith into hands which have been tied by monsters. But even they too have a heart. There are ways in which our collective consciousness can and is working together to spread the message of hope and love for the moment of now to be lifted higher than enlightenment. This is hope for our future, and we will one day fly higher than you could ever imagine again. And for those of you who have wondered what this new psychedelic renaissance is through the eyes of a psychotherapist operating out of San Francisco in the freshly decriminalized Oakland, here you go. Jen Price. We have to go.
I made a Kickstarter video at one point, so.
Wait, okay, that works. So, entheogenic Jen, the Jen of all prices, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
You just had a bunch of clients.
How are you doing? Okay.
Where did you come from? You said you came home on a train. Where were you?
Oh, I was at my therapy office, which is just in a different part of the Sunset in San Francisco where I live.
Okay.
So I was just seeing clients most of the day today.
Is that with the somatic psychotherapy practice that you have?
That is, yeah.
Okay, so for those of you who haven't been to entheogen.com, that's E-N-T-H-E-O-J-E-N.com, please do yourself a favor and go check it out. Click on About Jen, and then you're going to learn about this amazing girl right here. So for you, I think you've been super busy just by looking at that website, because there's a huge list of, like,
credentials and licenses and everything that you have, and you look super young, so I'm thinking that you've just been busting your ass for like 20 years or whatever right now. So the one that I thought, the one that I thought was interesting, somatic psychotherapy. So I don't know exactly what that is. I could guess, but tell us, what is somatic psychotherapy and how are you integrating this into your life's work?
Great question. Somatic psychotherapy is basically, I describe it most easily as what all psychotherapy kind of should be. So essentially it's I'm a MFT with, basically I incorporate knowledge of the body into regular therapeutic work. So some clients come and talk, like the whole session is just kind of talk therapy. But with a lot of clients, I work in the body, which is the somatic part of it. So we work basically, most therapy works top down. So it's going in through the mind of like, what's going on with you? How can we work through that? And somatic psychotherapy just takes into consideration that your body tells you how you feel, your posture determines like in ways your identity and how you kind of move through the world, and how experiences and trauma are stored in your body, and just using that information to help kind of change your system from the bottom up as well as from top down.
That's cool. And so does that... How would you compare that to like Ayurvedic medicine? Where
it's, so Ayurvedic, yeah. I mean, it's more in the realm of just standard, like what people imagine as psychotherapy. If anything, it's a little bit more entwined. So before this, I was a yoga teacher. I still do that, but and body work and Reiki, and those actually seemed like kind of beautiful groundwork to prepare me for this. So it's a little bit more in line with that kind of body awareness side of things. Ayurveda brings in like herbs and ways of eating and things, and I don't necessarily get into that kind of thing. It's more like people are experiencing something usually in the moment or with past memories, and I'll just ask like, where do you feel that in your body? What is it like, how are you physically experiencing that thing? And then we can kind of work with the sensation to shift the experience.
Okay, so like whenever I have like anxiety, like I get it all the time, right? It's like a knot in my stomach, or it's like up by my heart. Like how, what if someone tells you that, what do you say? I mean, this is like,
So perfect. So we would either kind of naturally navigate our way in if you're talking about an experience that you had that week or a memory that brought a lot of anxiety, bringing you to that point of like realizing that it's a knot, and then maybe some deeper questions of like, how tight is the knot? What does it constrict? Like, what's your posture with that? Getting really clear. So it's like a lot of deep body awareness.
Yeah.
Because a lot of us are walking around not even actually registering how we're feeling all the time. Or like we experience the effect of it, but not the kind of origin of it.
Yeah.
And then there's different ways of working with that. So like I could walk you through a guided visualization to like hone in on that knot and maybe use breathing and visualizing the knot kind of lightly coming looser and getting softer and the space opening up around it. Another kind of common technique is, especially with anxiety, it's often like a kind of a tightening and a hardening of some kind. So in somatic psychotherapy, we kind of believe that all the information is useful. So any information your body is giving you, it's trying to communicate, even if it's misguided. So stress is actually like trying to protect you. It's putting you into, your brain is registering something as like a dangerous situation, even if it's an email from your boss. And your body's like getting you ready to deal with that, even if it's misguided these days. So part of what we do is, yeah, getting the awareness and then connecting into that sensation in a way. So if you're feeling tightness, I would actually sometimes have you accentuate that tightness and hold that, and then really incrementally let go of it. So you're kind of like harnessing into, you're like, I'm listening. Body, I hear you, I'm engaging in what you're trying to do, but like I'm here and we don't have to keep doing that, and then kind of helping the person guide themselves out of it.
It's a really empowering
thing to explain, even with clients. It's kind of like sometimes I'll lay out an exercise that we're going to do, and I have to just be like, let's just do it, and you'll understand what I'm saying.
Right, yeah. It sounds like the whole empowering, like, your body does the healing. So, like, as a conscious being, you can take charge of that and kind of lead the healing, right?
Yeah, and, like, work together with your body. Like, yeah. We're living in this thing, mm-hmm. and we kind of treat it as, like, people are largely living just in their minds. So it's actually, like, incredibly empowering to get down into your body, because it helps you be more in the moment, which is where any catalyst for power or influence is in the moment. And, yeah, just working with the body is powerful.
That's cool. So you're doing that in San Francisco. When I can jump ship here, when was the first time you encountered the healing powers of mushrooms, either psychoactive or non-psychoactive? Oh. Like, how did mushrooms come into your life?
Yeah. Well, I was always a fan of, like, you know, sauteed mushrooms as a child, but, okay. I'm kind of a rebel and a contrarian, and it's really interesting to me that I didn't do psychedelics of any kind until I was 29.
Okay.
And I actually started with ayahuasca. So mushrooms, because, yeah, I think I did psychedelic ones before I even tried lion's mane, which I love, or reishi or cordyceps, which, I mean, they're all of them are amazing. But
agreed.
So, yeah, the first actual experience was pretty beautiful. It was with my brother, who I realize in retrospect is, like, a pretty trippy artist. After I started doing psychedelics, I was like, oh, that's how he comes up with these things. But we went to Joshua Tree, and he's nicely experienced, so he had a good setup for it. And we got up at dawn and ate them at dawn, and then took this long hike that was to an actual desert oasis.
That's so cool.
So it was like 2 hours of hiking, and then a true just like palm trees and waterfalls and hummingbirds, and like also in my perception, like glowing rocks. And like, yeah. And it was like, we got there like basically right as we were peaking, and it was my first time having that experience, because ayahuasca is really different and it's not mobile or like hilarious.
Sure.
In the same kind of way. So, yeah, it was a really just beautiful kind of bonding experience with my brother. I felt like I was in good hands, and Joshua Tree is kind of a perfect place for that. So
totally.
That was my first time out with them.
Well, that sounds like a fun time.
yeah, I recommend it.
So Joshua Tree, where are you from? Like, originally.
I grew up in Michigan, but my pathway, I went to college in Chicago, and then lived in Australia for 2 years. That was where I did my yoga teacher training and started practicing there. And then New York City for 3 years. And then I moved to San Francisco for grad school.
Awesome. So as a psychotherapist, when you're dealing with like psilocybin and everything we've been learning about it, how would you explain to somebody how like psilocybin mushrooms could help heal whatever you have going on, like mentally or physically? Because I know that it heals like hearing and vision and all kinds of other cool stuff.
Cluster headaches, migraine headaches.
All this good
stuff.
Which
is life-changing for people, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's tricky. I mean, we're at this really tricky moment in time of like, as a psychotherapist, I can't... I'm really careful with the way I talk about it, and I basically like only provide information.
Yeah.
I do integration work with people. Like if they've gone and done it on their own, mm-hmm. I can, as a psychotherapist, help them with their integration.
Right. Yeah. They like come back and like, oh my God, I had this experience. And then they come back and you can like help walk them through their feelings after the fact.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, and grounding it, and it's just, as a therapist, it's really fun, because it's, like, it takes a lot of time with some people to kind of, like, crack them open in a way, or, like, for them to crack open, mm-hmm. And for change to happen, and psychedelics are such, like, they speed the process up.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so just gotta say that directly, that I don't work directly with them as a psychotherapist. But
yeah, totally.
It's been really interesting as I've done more research, because I kind of started with personal experiences and felt really strongly about it, and then got some therapeutic work in, which I think we'll talk about later. And then started like really studying the science of what was actually going on with it.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there's a layer of like basically, yeah, the variety of things. I don't know of any substance out there that's like this, that is like by day, there's another, like every day there's like another thing that it seemingly can help with.
Yeah.
And doesn't have side effects or risk of like overdosing or whatever. But yeah, I mean, things that basically everybody experiences, anxiety, depression, grief, they're using it for people with terminal diagnosis, just facing the end of their lives,
right.
Cluster headaches, migraines. There's a lot of research now, or movement towards research for Parkinson's, dementia, Alzheimer's. That's what they're finding it's good for. But what's going on in the brain, do you want me to get into this?
Neurobiology of what's actually happening? You can go there, do it, for sure.
Yeah, after, like...
Teach us.
Yeah, I had basically been microdosing haphazardly for a few years before I realized that microdosing was a thing that other people were doing, or that there was protocols. But also before, like, I was feeling the effects, but I didn't know what was actually happening in my brain. And when I found out, I was like, what? Like... it made perfect sense, but also it's so amazing. So it's kind of a three-part thing. It works with the 5-HT2A, which is basically a serotonin, how do I want to say it? It mimics serotonin, basically. So it's not the exact same serotonin that we produce, but it can connect into our serotonin receptor sites. So it brings in serotonin, which kind of creates, like, that's the happiness, well-being, that chemical. So that's going on. And then I think the major two things, though, are, it's a three-part thing. So one thing it does is get you out of the default mode network,
uh-huh.
which is basically the way your brain talks to itself. And it determines essentially like the background program that's running on your brain at all times, which includes like basically your ego, your identity, decision-making, beliefs, things that just kind of come in, like they influence the way you're thinking without you even realizing it.
Yeah.
They also think a lot about it's memories and future thinking. So any kind of like daydreaming or rumination or thinking about the past, which are kind of all things that are often factors in depression and anxiety.
Yeah.
The default mode network is really highly engaged in that kind of set of things. So, and the default mode network gets essentially locked in around the age of 12. So like your experiences up until that point kind of like lock in who you think you are, how you perceive the world. And so I think the best analogy is basically like, so around the age of 12, you've got these, like, it's a snowy hill. You've got some like really deep grooves of sleds that have been going down the same pathways for years. So if you like throw a sled onto that hill, it's going to go into one of those grooves and just go straight down without question.
Right.
And what psilocybin does is essentially throw fresh snowfall on there, and it's not even opening up the default mode network, but it basically like shuts it down.
That's a really cool way to put it.
Yeah. So there's these pictures of, there's one really good one of just, it's a circle with these lines going through it, and it's like maybe 10 lines going through it, and that's your default mode network. And then on psilocybin, it's like 100 lines going through it. So it basically, without the default mode network kind of locking down your mind can talk to itself in different ways and experience the world in different ways and process information in different ways that has a pretty profound effect on your perception of yourself and the world and decision making and like anything that you might be facing at that time. So that's going on. And then the third thing is that basically psilocybin like lights up the amygdala, and the amygdala is essentially where fight or flight lives, or where PTSD lives. So the amygdala is where we, when we take in information, it tells us how we feel about it. So in a physical sense, like it's basically detecting for danger first and foremost.
Yes.
So that's why the PTSD, so PTSD, it would be like a very overactive in a particular kind of way. Interestingly, antidepressants shut down activity in the amygdala. So the benefit of it shutting down the range of activity is that negativity is blunted. But with that comes a blunting of positivity too. Like I have clients who are on antidepressants and they like their world is, they feel their world is just kind of like a little beige or rounded around the edges and just like, and it's, I definitely don't bash antidepressants at all, but it does, since depression is so connected to connection and empathy towards other people and yourself, I just wonder, especially kind of long-term impacts of that capacity being blunted while on antidepressants, if connection is kind of like deeper connection is blunted. Psilocybin essentially lights up the amygdala. So it opens up activity in the emotional center, essentially is what that is. And there's been a lot of the research I came across was saying that their answer was basically like, we don't know why that doesn't mean more negativity happening as a result. Like it leans towards positive. So it's a general emotional center. So you would think if it lights up, like if it's really active, all range of emotions would be happening in that. But I kind of have a theory that because of the serotonin activity and the opening up of the default mode network, that like tilts the brain towards positivity. So if the emotional center is opened up and all the conditions are set for positivity and problem solving and seeing perspective, then it leans positive. That's the kind of quick overview of the neurobiology of what's happening.
No, that's amazing. I've always wanted someone to explain it the exact way that you just did. So thank you.
great. Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool because when you're talking about antidepressants and the whole like connectivity thing, I've heard that many, many times over from people who take them. And I mean, I'll say it for you. I'm sure it's pretty frustrating sometimes when in your office you probably just want to be like, have you heard of mushrooms? Because, yeah.
Yeah.
So, cool.
And the other thing that I like absolutely can't and don't advise people on, but like a cool thing, especially about microdosing, is that so far it seems like it's an okay thing to do in addition to taking antidepressants. Okay. They do a bit neutralize each other, or like you get less of an effect from psilocybin if you're on antidepressants.
Right.
Interesting. But they're not. You can take them at the same time. So I know of people who have eased themselves off of antidepressants by starting microdosing overlapping, because getting off of antidepressants is no small thing. It's like can be dangerous, definitely should be doctor led, but it's a really hard process to do. And I know of people who that process was made much easier by microdosing while they were doing it.
That's really cool. I heard a cool study recently where it was micro versus macro dosing with psilocybin, where they put mice on like an electric shock board and then they'd make a tone, and after the tone they would give them a like semi-painful shock or whatever, and so obviously it didn't take them long to associate the two. But then, so they wanted to see like the difference between micro and macro dosing psilocybin, with macro dosing being like a full dose. It took them about 10 rounds on average before the mice disassociated. So they would shock them after the tone, and then they would dose them, and every time they do the tone after that, they wouldn't shock them. So they wanted to see, like, how long would it take. So it took them 10 times with the macro dosing, but with micro dosing, it took them 2 times on average. Like, amazingly. And it, I guess that makes sense because, like, you're flooding the brain, and it's just complete craziness with the, like, a full dose, which is good for, like, life-changing, but then you have micro dosing, which is good for, like, every day kind of going through life and just, yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like, yeah, it's like a different realm of learning. Like, the macro dosing and, like, the goal is to, like, touch the face of God or, like, launch away from regular reality.
Right.
But, yeah, that study when I read that made total sense to me because it's basically, like, you're living, when you're microdosing, you're still you. And your reality is still your reality. You might be, like, perceiving it slightly different or reacting to it slightly different, but it's still completely you. I mean, the whole concept is that it's like they say sub-perceptive, but I like to feel a light bit, but it's definitely sub-hallucinogenic. Like, definitely. What you're seeing is what's actually happening. But so, yeah, it makes perfect sense to me that when you're doing that, you're learning as you, but with kind of a broader, with your brain working in this different way. It makes sense to me that the learning would happen a lot quicker with the microdosing of all the options.
That's cool. Have you ever gone to a John Hopkins website and looked at all the published articles they have? Like, I just did that for the I did that for the first time today. If you're listening and you're wondering, you should go and do that to see some really relevant research topics that they're going over right now. And it's really amazing. Like, in this year alone, and then if you look at 2019 and 2018, it's just like so much they're looking into right now. It's
so really amazing what's been happening.
It's amazing. It's super amazing. It's super, for anybody who's like, you can't be upset about, like, it's before, like, this time, if you had this knowledge of, like, oh my God, these things heal, but it's so suppressed. Like, yeah, you could get pretty frustrated with, like, the government and just how it's all illegal. But, like, looking at that list, just the 2019 list alone of, like, what they're looking into is, like, super enlightening and just gives me a lot of hope about the future of where we're going to be as a society. Just, you know, it doesn't take long to figure out once you get introduced to the world and you personally experience it and have other people experience it around you, not just psilocybin mushrooms, but, like, reishi mushrooms, turkey tail, like, oh, there's so much just in this world of fungi that we live in that there could be a positive effect, like, in every, that's so fun. That's why I'm doing this. That's why I made this podcast. That's why I'm trying to reach out to anybody and everybody that wants to talk about it because there's so much to talk about that I don't know, you know? Like, I learn every day. I talk to someone new about it, and it's just, yeah, there we are.
Totally. And I love that so much research is happening just because, like, I also kind of love that to some degree, they're never going to figure out some bits of it.
Oh, of course.
There's, like, some of it's kind of just magic. And, like, I love that. But I love that it's getting grounded and that it's being taken so seriously because I believe it can, like, change society. Like,
absolutely.
I think it can heal a lot of people who really need it. And what it addresses is, like, essentially what's, like, the most widespread issues that plague people.
Depression.
So,
from such
and a... I nerd out on science, but I also love things being taken seriously and legitimized. So it's not just like, yeah, it, like, was great, and then I felt different after, and I loved it. But, like, I think it does something to take it seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point that when you said we're not... There's always going to be parts of it we don't know. And I think that's where... in the past, like, everything's so, like, physical, like, it, we have to know what it does and how it's going to affect them so we can categorize it and ship it out. But with this, it's like, we're all unique individuals and this is going to help us as unique individuals. So on a federal level, they're accepting, like, they are now accepting that okay, this is not something that we can just put in a box. Like, it's, we have to give adults, grown human beings, the power to take their own mental health and physical health into their own hands and use this substance, because it's going to help them in ways that we don't even understand. But all we know is that the science is showing that there's zero negative effects and only positive effects. And at minimum, somebody might just walk away and be like, that wasn't really my thing, I'm not going to touch it again. But 5 years down the line, when they re-talk to those people, they're like, oh yeah, I remember that. No, it doesn't affect me at all. Cool. Later.
And with all the research and with people just being able to openly talk about it, like,
That's,
it's an interesting thing, especially as like a therapist, to like, when I threw up my Instagram and people started engaging, it was like, going out of the darkness into the light. Like, but I think it's really important, because how else do people learn about like how to create the right experiences, how to prepare them? It's harm reduction, essentially. Like,
well, that's why the 60s...
harm reduction / experience expansion, like, because you can do it haphazardly and get an effect, but if you really engage in what you're doing, I think you can get a much deeper effect.
Right.
And yeah, you can like do a lot of things to prevent what would be deemed a bad trip.
Exactly. Yay. that was cool. All right. Why don't we? So we had a phone call before. We talked about Oakland and decriminalization in a really cool place called The Haven. We're going to talk about that. But you told me about your time in Costa Rica as a therapist working in a drug rehab clinic. And that was a pretty amazing story that I think you should retell. So start wherever you want to and take us there.
Yeah. So as stated, I'm kind of a rogue person. And I started grad school in 2014. Okay. And I was definitely the weirdo who was like obsessed with psychedelic therapy, like somehow made all my papers relate to it and like would find any way to bring it into the mix. I created a rogue internship for grad school. So in my first summer, I just contacted an Ibogaine treatment center in Costa Rica and asked if they could use help, and they for sure could. Ibogaine centers are, there's a real variety of different Ibogaine centers. Very, very medical, which I personally wouldn't, that wouldn't be my preference. But a lot of them are pretty off the grid situations that are like, they're not really regulated. And a lot of them are started by people who got off of opiates via Ibogaine, and their life was so deeply touched by it that they opened centers.
So what is Ibogaine for anyone that doesn't know?
So which is like most people, I should have.
I still don't exactly know.
So Ibogaine is a super powerful psychedelic. It comes from the root of the iboga tree, which grows in Gabon in Africa. Okay. And they've used it in Africa for many hundreds of years. And they just grind up the root bark and take large amounts of it, starting as a rite of passage. And then they do it as kind of like a therapeutic or community building thing. But Ibogaine's amazing, and I hope starts getting more studies and funding and attention, because it essentially like made real simple resets the dopamine receptor sites in the brain. So it helps opiate users get off of opiates with essentially no withdrawal, no cravings. So the withdrawal process is like quite a nightmare. I saw some people start to go into it while I was down there, and it's like, as an empathic person, it's like a hard thing to even watch somebody go through.
Right.
And from what most people report, even once you get through kick, like once you get through the meat of it, you still will likely have cravings, like basically for the rest of your life, because you've messed with the brain chemistry, and kind of your brain's always going to want more dopamine. So Ibogaine essentially resets it. Like, we would let people start going into withdrawal. They would start having the symptoms, and we would dose them with Ibogaine, and the symptoms would go away. And then they basically deep trip all night. So we would dose them around 9 p.m. and it gives you ataxia, which means so your body can't move that well.
Okay.
So we would just have them laying on a bed, and they're totally conscious and awake, but generally eyes closed and still for like a good 8 hours. And then they wake up in the morning and their body is no longer addicted. And often they've had a pretty therapeutic, not necessarily easy trip, but often that has information for like how and why they became addicted. Yeah. Like people will see traumatic experiences and stuff. And yeah, so I worked down there, and then I connected into the people who were running that, and there were a couple of different iterations. So I kind of basically just throughout grad school, on every break that I had, I would just go back and do that work. I got pretty obsessed with it because I couldn't believe the profound change that I was witnessing. After the first summer,
I was gonna say, no recreational use for Ibogaine, because it's the whole ataxia thing. I could see people listening who don't know that it could heal opiate addiction, and they'd be like, why the F would anybody ever take that? But it kind of makes sense that you're going to have that intense of an experience to not only take away your symptoms of withdrawal, but completely like take away the craving. Would you guys like follow up? Is there any studies, or did you guys follow up on like a year, 2 years, 3 years down the line, if they still were like craving free?
Sometimes people would have some cravings after, and in that case, we would microdose them on it, and then that would, like, essentially within a few days, that would go away. But, yeah, I mean, it was kind of the bummer of the situation, because I had to come back and be in grad school and doing all of that, but I stayed connected with probably, I don't know, 25-ish of them, and the success rate of people staying clean was pretty good, but it also, that whole experience made me really extra like double down on believing in therapeutic support, because I saw these amazing transformations happen in people, but then they go home to the place and the people and environment that kind of like created the situation in the first place or was part of it, and the like epiphany effects kind of wear off. And if you don't have something to help keep that alive and ground it and integrate it, then I think it's harder to stick with it. But a good percentage are still clean. And like the first client that I treated is amazing. I think she had been addicted for 20 years. And it's also nobody's first rodeo going down there to get off. Like everyone's tried many different things before they go to a jungle and take an African psychedelic to get off of opiates. So, but she had been addicted for 20 years and did like Ibogaine changed her, and she came back and got a drug counselor certificate and it has now opened a center in Mexico.
That's good news. Thanks.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about New York?
New York, it was just, I managed I was general manager for Cindy Lee's yoga center in New York called Om Yoga.
Okay.
And ran was GM also for Yoga for Cancer, which was like a training program and series of classes for teaching yoga to people with cancer.
Cool. All right. And then, so from New York, you ended up in California. Right.
Uh-huh.
And how did
I would say thanks to ayahuasca.
Tell us how.
Threw a segue right in there.
Boom.
So first psychedelic I ever did was ayahuasca 4 times in the Peruvian jungle.
Okay.
Or in the Amazon with my brothers. And basically, on the last trip, the easiest way to say it is basically it just was like, you don't live in New York anymore. And I was like, well, that seems correct. Like it's somehow the communication just landed as like, yeah, that's a fact. Even though I hadn't been thinking about leaving.
Yeah.
And it showed me California and it showed me a coast that I didn't know, which I like then thought like it was Mendocino.
Okay.
Like I went there later and was like, oh, this is that place. But there was a guy on the ayahuasca retreat who I ended up coming to San Francisco to visit and found somatic psychotherapy. And I had been looking for something that would kind of like pull everything that I was interested in together. And somatic psychotherapy was like dream degree. So
good job.
I moved here for that.
Sweet.
Okay, so you have a bunch of things going on. You have Micrology, you have NeuroHikes. Do you want to talk about either of those?
Yeah, we might as well throw Hug Life in there too, if all in the same.
Hug Life, yeah.
Yeah, so.
A Wonder Woman of sorts. Are you there?
I'm a Capricorn. I'm a business creator, I guess. I can't stop myself. It's all the microdosing. My brain's just all the ideas.
Creativity. Creativity breeds happiness, breeds creativity, yeah. Breeds happiness, and it just keeps building and building and building and building, and you keep on going. It's awesome. Try. Yep.
Exactly. Yeah. And like some really good ideas. But yeah, Micrology is four of us. So it's like this little collective of, it's me, a horticulturalist, a kind of like social impact person.
Yeah.
And a woman who was like, she's a person who got off of bipolar meds by microdosing and basically had her whole, like her bipolar meds had really bad side effects, and just the depth to which her life was changed by microdosing was moved her to want to be part of something that helped kind of spread the word. So we're essentially like a educational collective that are gathering people in Oakland to teach about microdosing. We have a microdosing 101 workshop that's a full overview, like some history of psychedelics, some of the neurobiology stuff that I talked about.
Yeah.
Therapeutic application stuff. So I'm making, and I'm acting as a coach, in that work. I'm clear that it's just coaching, so I don't go too deep with people in that realm, but I'm making a workbook for people to kind of ground microdosing, because I see it too as microdosing is an opportunity to deepen anything else that can improve your life, basically. Yeah. So like, a meditation practice would deepen faster with it. Therapy would open up and deepen faster. Like yoga practice, basically anything that's good for you is like kind of gonna, the grooves are gonna go deeper faster if you're microdosing with it. So I'm creating some kind of things to accompany if somebody's doing a microdosing regime, how to kind of engage in it more and deepen the effects that you want to get from it.
Sweet.
Yeah. And then, yeah, with that, we're going to do some kind of experiential things that, and it's all like people would microdose on their own. And then, but like microdose yoga, microdose guided hikes, just to kind of get people together so they can talk about their experiences too and have all the information they need to do it safely and like in the most effective way.
That's cool. That's really cool. So you're doing these classes, and you said you're doing them in Oakland. Are you just doing it at the Haven, or are you doing it anywhere else than that right now?
Yes, so far it's just been at the Haven, yeah.
Okay.
So, and then, yeah, we'll go off-site for hikes and, like, for some of the different things.
Yeah.
What's
the Haven?
We're thinking about doing, like, grow workshops, too. But, yeah, the Haven in general?
Yeah, yeah, tell us about it. Because you told me about it the other day for the first time.
Yeah.
Cool.
I want to connect you with the guy who's like can really speak to it. I'm a very like periphery getting to be part of it, but yeah, essentially one of the people who was a major influence in Decriminalize Oakland, who helped push that bill through,
mm-hmm.
he I believe is a property developer, just in his like that's his regular work.
His gig.
And he was so moved by a mushroom experience a couple of years ago that he kind of took on this cause. He saw the benefits of it, and he has a really beautiful community mindset and a vision that like I won't go into because it's so like I won't do it justice, and it's sure. His to talk about. But mm-hmm. Essentially, he bought this old, I'm pretty sure it's like an old Quaker church. It's a really interesting, beautiful old space that's pretty sizable. And it's pretty much where almost any psychedelic gathering in the Bay Area is happening now. So San Francisco Psychedelic Society, it seems like the majority of their events are being held there. And the Haven itself has done several gatherings of just getting, because there's a ton of stuff just like, people have ideas and like little businesses or enclaves or groups or like integration circles different ways of gathering and stuff, that the coolest stuff is happening in Oakland right now. And the Haven seems to be just kind of like the place where people can go to mix and mingle and see what's going on, and get a lot of, there's a lot of like educational, informational workshops and events and talks and stuff. So yeah, it's when I stumbled into that place, I was like, how, what? And his vision for the future for it is so, it's just a really beautiful, inclusive concept that I feel extremely lucky to live close to.
Well, like, I feel lucky to live where I live right now. Try to get that guy on the show. So this the Haven,
excuse me,
because this bill was only passed in June of this year, right?
Yeah. I'm
pretty sure. So that's what, it's November now, 2019, June. No, it's December. Yeah. It's December 1st today. Yeah, so that's pretty crazy. The Haven. If you're ever in Oakland, go to San Francisco, hop over to Oakland, see what's going on at the Haven.
Yeah. And follow San Francisco Psychedelic Society is amazing for like the realm of events that they're doing. CIS, also where I went to grad school, California Institute of Integral Studies, is worth following for, they have a decent amount of psychedelic offerings.
Okay,
cool. And then, all the decriminalized nature is like
everywhere. Yeah, anytime I type that in, like more and more cities pop up, like after the name decriminalized nature.
It's so bad. Yeah.
I don't know. It's one of those things that it's like, we're definitely not in the reefer madness time anymore. Like the federal government just passed the bill in the House to legalize cannabis at the federal level. So like,
mm-hmm.
We're moving on, everybody. Don't be afraid. We're all adults. We're all mature. Hopefully some of us are mature. But
yeah. Plants are cool. They're smart.
It's crazy. It's all good. Nature is just, it should be at the forefront. Like, even when I talk to people about like environmental, like just being environmentally like conscious, like eco-friendly, all that, right? Like, don't even focus on climate change, but like, this is our home and we owe it to this planet that, for all we know right now, there's nowhere else we're gonna fucking live. Like, even though people are talking about Mars, are you gonna go to Mars and live tomorrow? No. So why are you gonna pollute your rivers?
This is
why are you
gonna? Our mama.
Dude, yeah, you gotta take care of this place. Like, just, it's your duty as a living being on this planet. You got, just take care of it. Be a little more friendly any way you can. It's hard because we're seemingly stuck in this environment where there's a lot of waste, especially in America and other like industrialized nations, where anytime you turn your lights on, anytime you drive your car, like you're polluting because it's burning, and or just water. Like living in California, in Southern California specifically, right? Like we grew up, there's like droughts and they're like save water, but like it doesn't seem like people take it as seriously as if they would if they tried to turn the water on and nothing came out, you know? Like, there's people in Africa and all over the place where their kids and people in general are just dying because there's no water, and the amount of sickness all over the world, like, from contaminated water. Like, you'll see people, like, scooping bales of water out of the dirtiest, shittiest stream you could ever imagine. And, like, in this continent, we'd be like, you're fucking crazy. I'm not going to drink that. But that's all they have, you know? So, like, when you're taking a shower, or we go to spas, and, like, it's great for us. And I wish everybody in the world could have a spa or, like, whatever. But, that's something else. Through my personal use of fungi, both psychoactive and not psychoactive, it's really kind of helped me feel connected. Because I say it all the time and reference it, that like we came from fungi, we are fungi people. And so they grow like vast thousands of acres, like across forest floors. And so I feel like using them, obviously, it like opens up that communication between me and the ancient wisdom of like life, that like the forest, you know, like if you've never gone in a forest, like you're not really gonna understand what I'm saying.
but walking through like a dense forest where it's like it's just life. It's really crazy. And even just like sitting, like I lived in Santa Cruz for a while, and that's redwood forest, and you like walk around for a while and just sit, and you're sitting in the duff, and it's like stuff that's actively decomposing and going back into the soil that then produces nutrients for trees to grow, for them to then die one day and go back into the soil and then be reproduced into trees and die. And it's just it's a fun little trip of a life we're in here. And then on the other note, it's really interesting how like for psilocybin, right, one of the more popular ones now is the end of life treatments they did, where you're definitely going to die from cancer. There's no saving you at this point. So here, take a bunch of mushrooms, or we'll dose you with pure psilocybin, and that anxiety of death, the fear of death, goes away. And I feel that it's because of what I was just talking about. Like, you feel connected. Like, yeah, like death sucks because you don't want to leave behind your loved ones, or you're just not ready to go or whatever. But at the same time, it's like, it's just life. It's part of life. And since using those, it's kind of made me, through that understanding and accepting that my fate of like, I'm only going to be here for a certain amount of time, it makes being here now in the moment like super awesome. And I really enjoy it and just try to make the best out of every moment. And knowing that, like, I mean, you have so many hours in the day. I have to get up at like 5:30 every morning. So like my cutoff time is midnight, but literally until midnight, we're going. Like, there's so much to do. And I think you obviously understand that. Micrology, neuro hikes, hug life, somatic psychotherapist. So, awesome.
But yeah, and on all of that, like, I think it definitely feels to me like it's no coincidence, or like, it's definitely no small thing that there's this big psychedelic surgence that's happening right now, that like, these are substances that help give us different perspectives, help us connect into the natural world, help us connect to ourselves, and help us come up with solutions that we maybe wouldn't otherwise. Like, it helps with problem solving and like
creative thinking problems to the max. Like,
yeah. And empathy. And yeah, it just, like, I put a decent, not kind of actively, but like somewhere in me, I put a decent amount of hope that like psychedelics are gonna help take us where we need to go, where they're like, there's some things that like we don't have answers for. And if we don't come up with answers, bad things happen.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of change that like we're in the midst of, a lot of stress and change, and there are these things that can help us, and they're making themselves known right now. So
yeah. And
yeah,
for yeah, that's great. You got any closing remarks?
I felt like I had something actually too on the end of life perspective thing too. Oh, I think, yeah, just like another overall thing that it does is, for me at least, like it helps with ungripping. Like, we try to be in control of things so much, and it's just like, it's a fool's mission. Like, it's not, we can't be, but we try so hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And it creates so many problems for us. And like, acceptance, and that's not apathy, but like, acceptance to some degree, and just like an ungripping is a huge thing that I've gotten out of it, that I can see as part of the
letting go of expectation.
It's gonna go how it goes, and like, there's a bigger thing that's working, and I'm not in charge of it.
Pretty much.
But yeah, I don't know. I'm so happy that you are doing what you're doing. And I'm so happy of like all the different networks that are popping up and connecting together online, in person. And the amount of people that I want to refer to you to interview for your podcast, like,
please. Yeah.
I'm so glad I have that many people in mind, that there's this much activity happening. Cause it feels really good to connect with other people about it. Cause it's been such a kind of like
hush-hush,
or like, it's been such a weird thing.
Well, on the note for that. So like,
or has been,
I
since like high school, and I like caught wind of like the 60s and hippies and the psychedelic era, and like, these people are preaching like peace, love, unity. You have like armed National Guard coming out and stopping like peaceful hippie, like people with flowers in their ears, and they're like marching down the road and they're met with guns, and these people are putting flowers inside the gun barrel. Like, dude, no, there's a better way. Like, don't kill, don't be violent, love. Like, and I always was like, why did that die? Like, what the fuck went wrong? And so then, like, now that we're at this point, it's like, obviously, they were coming out of like the 50s. Like, you couldn't even show two people sleeping in bed. Like, they were sleeping in like beds next to each other, right? Like, they were kind of super straight laced, just like very, very, very controlled, no freedom in that sense. And then, you have psychedelics going to mainstream culture, and they didn't know how to handle it. And that's what you refer, like, that's why they need people like you who can teach, like, yo, this is super powerful. Like, you obviously can do it wrong. And so, but they needed to figure that out. And because it's psychedelics, and when you're at the very infancy of it, you're going to mess up and lose control of the whole movement. And they were overtaken by the people who didn't want that to succeed and break up society as they knew it then. And so now here we are again, as time has gone on and people have learned that story. And now we have this story. It's like any politician who is coerced into taking like some mushrooms or whatever, they're gonna look at life a little differently and understand that this isn't a bunch of hippies like just going and getting fried or whatever. Like, this is serious work that we all just want to like help one another.
And yeah, it's a true,
it's a community, yeah, like it's healing, a true empowerment, like, awesomeness
that would be a massive shame to not make use of, like,
exactly,
in a society where everybody is feeling the way they're feeling. Like, as a therapist, it's really interesting because I get to see kind of behind the veil, and like clients who anybody else who would see them would think that like their life's all together, everything looks perfect. But like, no, we're all like, there's a whole thing happening behind the scenes for all of us. And like, human life isn't easy, and we live in a particularly, I mean, they say all times had big obstacles, but I think we're in a pretty intense moment in time right now. And we need help.
Here it is. All right, Jen.
Gotta use all our tools.
Yeah, totally. Seriously, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you for being awesome and for doing this podcast and for hopefully the connections you're going to bring to me to help me learn, which is going to help everybody else who listens to this learn, because that's what this is all about. I want to learn and I want to share it at the same time. So, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Same. And thanks for having me. And yeah, thanks for doing the work you do, because we need to get it out in all the different ways. It's like really meaningful, useful information. So,
all right.
Looked around, round, 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 dear Prudence. Oh, to come out dead. The sun is up and the sky is blue. It's beautiful, and so are you, dear Prudence. Won't you come out today? Oh, 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 oh,
for you to learn that this is the way, and everything is fine.